My name is Caleb, and I serve as one of the pastors here at Desert Springs. And I wanted to say huge thanks to the folks who have stepped up over the last few months to serve here at DSBC. Pastor Don mentioned it a moment ago. This most recent April, we announced that we were launching our second service, which you are now in, our 11 o'clock service. And we announced it in April. We said, yeah, it takes like about 100 folks each week to like run Desert Springs. And we asked that the Lord would provide folks who stepped up to serve. And we've had over 100 people step up to serve since April. And so huge thanks to those of you who are using your gifts, talents, and resources to minister in a variety of different ways in and through Desert Springs. We believe that everyone is called to ministry, to service. Sometimes that's through a local church like Desert Springs. Sometimes it's in our homes. Sometimes it's just out in other organizations. And our team is committed to helping you discern how God's calling you to serve, whether that be here at Desert Springs or out in the broader community with another organization. So thank you for your heart of service. It is here at Desert Springs helping us to cultivate a community that disrupts complacency and fosters healing for the broken, which is all of us. And that's what we're all about, and that's the mission that many of you are investing in and working towards, and so thank you. Today we're continuing on in a series called Fear Not, in which we're looking at Scripture to find an ancient Jesus-centered wisdom in order to navigate and engage and process our fears. So feeling fear is a very natural thing. It's part of the human experience. And yet we recognize that there's healthy ways to process our fears, and then there's unhealthy ways to process our fears. And so we're looking at the text to discern what's a wise, Jesus-centered way to process our fears. And today we're going to be in the book of Proverbs, chapter 3, which is available to you in your handout. If you have a Bible, we're using the Christian Standard Version, but whatever translation you have is great. And if you're joining us online, you don't have a Bible available, you can just open up a new browser and go to Bible.com. We're using the Christian Standard Version of the Bible today. I wanted to draw your attention to this text because it speaks to an ancient wisdom that's helping us navigate a very real modern question, and this is the question. In fact, it came up during the election. So a couple weeks ago, we had an election, and a lot of the statisticians and pundits and folks who are kind of hashing out what happened during the election, why people voted, surveys, things like that, one of the questions that gets asked is, what was top of mind when you voted the way you voted? So regardless of how you voted, what was top of mind? And there's all sorts of different answers, but one of the most frequent answers to that question of what was on my mind when I voted was this statement, the economy, money. Now, thinking about the economy, thinking about money, those are often answers to a deep question that we all ask. You guys ready for the question? Will I have my needs met? It's the deep human need for safety. We are all born with it. It is within us, and we're asking the question, will I have my needs met? And money, economy, whatever words you want to put to it, that is a tool to answer the question, will I have my needs met? Have you guys ever asked that question? Will I have my needs met? How am I going to be able to eat tomorrow? How am I going to be able to take care of my family? Like, what does tomorrow hold? And much of the fear and even anxiety that we feel is around this question of, will I have my needs met? And so that was a motivation for many people with how they voted. It has been the motivation for my experience as an American over the last 43 years, well, since I've been paying attention the last 23 years, I notice in my own life, as I've thought back over the last 23 years of my adult life, I have been referred to as an American consumer more than a dozen times to my memory, that I'm told from leadership in this country that one of the ways that I can best participate in this community is to consume. I'm not only referred to as an American consumer, I remember when we went to war in early 2000, I was told by my then president, I was invited to pray, I was also told that one of the best ways that I can show my support for the country was to purchase. To buy, because if we can keep the economy going, then we can have safety. So answering the question, will I have my needs met tomorrow? Will I find safety tomorrow? In America, it does seem to me, you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, that many of us are trying to answer that question with money. Moreover, Americans are sick with this idea that money answers another question, namely, who am I? That if I could just have enough money, if I could just have enough material wealth, then I'll be somebody. And on television programs and movies and the stories that we tell, even the way that we pressure young people to pursue certain lanes in life, underneath all of that is not only the question, how will I get taken care of and how will you take care of yourself, but also, who am I and who are you? Jesus talks about greed as if it's a problem of the eye, that it's something that we can't often see because we're swimming in a community that answers the question, will I have my needs met, with money, economy. And so I'd like for us to look at Proverbs 3, verses 5 through 12, and you tell me if you like this. You ready? Okay, this is like a rhetorical question. We're doing it anyways. So if you're ready or not, here we go. Proverbs 3, verse 5, trust. Proverbs chapter 3, verse 5, trust. When we're asking the question, will my needs be met? We are asking a trust type question. What power can I trust in to give me what I need? What person or what thing or what resource can I place my life into in such a way that will give me what I need? Here, Proverbs 3, verse 5 starts with trust. Okay, where am I going to place my trust? Trust in the Lord with what? Some of your heart, the rest you should trust to Bloomberg. No? Trust in the Lord with all of your heart. Maybe another way to think of this would be like all of your being. Trust in the Lord with all of your heart and do not rely on your own understanding. But God, listen. I watched some YouTube videos about crypto. I did a spreadsheet. I'm good. I have some understanding about my economic security. I think I'm like good at it. Like the spreadsheet does all the math for me. And yet this invitation is to trust what? Trust in the Lord with all your heart and do not lean on or rest in or rely on your own what? Understanding. By the way, you know why this is so helpful of a reminder? Do you think you're right? Like, come on, just tell me the truth. Like, you guys think you're right, right? Like, how you're currently investing, what you're doing with your money, the car you drove here today, how you voted, you think you're right, right? Okay, here's a question for you. Have you ever changed your mind? Have you ever believed something, came into new data, or a new way of seeing things, and then you had, like, a mind-altering, world-changing experience where the way that you used to be going, you're actually now going a different way. Has that ever happened to you? Okay, here's another question. Now, I'm just pushing on here. Do you think that'll ever happen again? Okay, good. So is your own present understanding a thing in which you feel confident placing your entire life into? This is a rhetorical question. All right, let's keep going. So trust in the Lord with all your heart. Do not rely on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he will make your path straight. So if I'm relying on the Lord, if I'm resting in the Lord, if I'm trusting in the Lord, then my path in front of me will be, as this text says, it will be straight, and I'll be able to see the way forward. We talk a lot here at Desert Springs about following Jesus as being the way in which we walk in the world, the way in which we're moving in the world. And so that path becomes straight. It's not crooked. It's not confusing. It becomes straight day by day, moment by moment. Verse 7, do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and turn away from evil. That's that repentance idea of having a mind-changing, mind-blowing experience. Verse 8, what was the question we were asking? Will I have my needs met? Will I be safe? That was the question, right, that we started with? I forget. This is second service, so I'm a little rusty. Right? That was the question? Okay, verse 8. So if I'm not relying on my own understanding, if I'm trusting the Lord with all my own heart, if I walk his way, if I see the path that he has in front of me, not trusting in my own eyes, but trusting in the Lord, that the things that, watch this now, that the things that he's calling to me to, though they might be scary or confusing, will actually lead me in a straight path towards what end? Where is Jesus leading me? Check this out, verse 8. This will be a healing for your body and a strengthening of your bones. What question am I asking? Will I have my... Okay, so I have a choice. Answering that question, will I have my needs met? I can either answer with my own understanding or my own wisdom or my own, like, grabbing at power, grabbing at money, grabbing at economic prowess, or I can trust in the Lord with my entire being, recognizing that he has a path in front of me that will lead to my good. You know the frustrating part, though? I can't see the whole path. Here's my conjecture. This is kind of my opinion. Like, why doesn't God just tell us the whole path? I think because if he does, then we're leaning on our own understanding again, and we're back in this endless loop and cycle of self-reliance. My conjecture, my thought is that there's a mysterious fog in front of me, a veil of unknowing, and so my following Jesus is not following Jesus because he shows me the whole path, but because he shows me that he's good. That if I follow his path, that there's only good for me on the other side of the veil of unknowing. But except for money, right? Let's see. Honor the Lord with your possessions. Stupid. I can't believe it said that. Okay, but see, I like my stuff. I like my money. I like my economic security. And yet this says, honor the Lord with your possessions. Notice what else it says. And with the first produce of your entire harvest, and then your barns will be completely filled, your vats overflowing with new wine. Okay, I want to read verse 11 now. By the way, Proverbs, by and large, is written artistically as a parent giving wisdom to a son. And so check this out, what it says in verse 11. What did we just read in verse 9? Honor the Lord with your possessions and with the first produce of your entire harvest. And then in verse 11, it says, don't despise the Lord's instructions. Why does it say that? Because I don't like verse 9. And if you like verse 9, let me get you to not like it. Notice the language of first produce. Now, for most of us, we're not out farming and harvesting. We're not really engaging in like having an ancient Near East way of growing food. Some of us have gardens in the backyard. Some of us have things we call gardens in our backyard that are actually monuments to plant murder that we engage in every cycle. When we see the little plant at Target and Joanna Gaines's little situation is there, and we're like, I'm gonna take care of this. And then you realize cycle after cycle after cycle that you are just destroying God's creation. So whatever it might be, a real actual garden that produce grows in, or a cemetery to plants, whatever it might be you have. Most of us are not familiar with the cycles of sowing, harvesting, and so on. And this idea of the first fruit, or this concept of first fruits, it gets to this idea. And centuries, Christians have practiced this this ancient tradition or practice that you actually find in the Hebrew scriptures, where the people who followed Yahweh would practice this, called, like, sometimes referred to as the tithe or giving of the first fruits. It's this idea that there's a certain amount of my income or certain amount of my produce that I give to the Lord. And so Christians throughout church history have engaged in this practice, sometimes referred to it as the tithe. And it's this idea that whatever funding I get, I give some of that back to the Lord. Now, here's the deal. I want to be very clear. The exchange that is made where a Christian gives money to a place like a church or a nonprofit or to people in need, whatever it might look like, when we do that, it's not, come with me now, it's not primarily about funding the work of God. Okay, so this idea of tithe, of giving in the first fruits, it's not primarily about funding. Now, Desert Springs Bible Church, we're funded based on the generosity of people who give of their funds, so we're a nonprofit organizations. But let me just ask you a hypothetical question. If God wanted to fund this ministry by putting a bunch of gold bullion in that bucket right there, do you think God could do it? Do you think God needs your money to do his ministry here and around the world? He does not. So what's the primary function of the tithe is not fund ministry. You know what it is? It's a means in which I put my money where my mouth is. So it's easy, relatively easy to sing, God, I trust in you. Until God says, cool, give me your first fruits. And you're like, actually spreadsheets. Actually Bloomberg, right? Or that yelling guy on the stock show. I don't remember his name, right? You guys know what I'm talking about? Like, I have more trust in, you know, the stocks than I do. But notice this idea of first fruits, by the way, if you aren't not liking verse 9 yet, I'll give it to you now. First fruits is this. If you are used to doing harvesting, sowing and harvesting, the first fruits is the first, you're never going to guess. It's the first fruit. The first fruits are the first fruits, very good, of, right, what comes out of the ground. And so you harvest it and you give the first to God. Now watch this. As the farmer or as the rancher, whatever it might be, you don't know if second fruits, third fruits, and fourth fruits are coming in, do you? It's not do your whole harvest and then go and calculate the math. It's give of the first fruits to God. Is that an act of faith? You tell me. So one of my heroes in ministry is a pastor who's now gone to be with the Lord, Tim Keller. And Keller would tell this story about this farmer that had, he had a farm and he was raising cows, a very small farm. And one day his prized cow was pregnant, and then the cow gave birth to twins. What a boon. What a blessing. And the farmer, feeling very magnanimous, went inside to his farmhouse, and he went to his wife, whose name is, I don't know, what's like a farmer's wife's name? Somebody help me out. Jane. He goes to his lovely wife, Jane, and he says, Jane, the Lord has blessed us with an abundance. We didn't just have one cow, we have two. Look at God. And he said, feeling very magnanimous, he says, I believe that we should give one of these two cows to the Lord. And Jane says, great, great. Yeah, that's great. Could you take out the trash, please? And so the farmer raises these cows, and year one goes by, and the cows grow bigger, and year two goes by, and the cows grow bigger. But then in year three, one of the cows dies. And the farmer, despondent, comes back into the home to his lovely wife, Jane. He says, Jane, I have some very bad news. The Lord's cow died. Now, Jane says, I don't remember you saying which of the two cows was the Lord's. I just remember he says, no. From the very beginning, it was always that sickly-looking one. That was going to be the Lord's cow. And what Keller would say after that story is, isn't it always the Lord's cow that dies? That we as a people, we have within us this desire for generosity and trusting in the Lord, and yet the temptation is to rely on our own understanding and answer the question to, will I have my needs met? Answer that question with our own wisdom, with grasping for our own power. And one of the things that we've been talking about as a church, especially over the last few months, is we've been experiencing and feeling chaos and concern about political instability, economic instability, even warfare and violence. One of the things that you've heard us encourage over the last few months is to learn lessons from the global church, where people are practicing their faith in places where there is rampant political, economic insecurity, places where there is violence and warfare, because they have resources to share with us. And so I want to invite up Abby Kikito, who's one of our strategic partners. She and her husband David serve in Uganda, which is not in Arizona. It's on another continent, I think called Africa. And she's going to share with us a bit about her experience about how she's seen God at work. And so would you please welcome Abby Kikito. Thank you. So, Abby, you are from Phoenix, and then you went from Phoenix to the capital city of Uganda, Kampala. How did you see God at work and God providing in that shift from being here to being there?
So, I moved.
I think it might be on.
I moved
here. Here, let me have a look. Okay. The light is on. And we should be good now. Try it.
I moved to Uganda.
If Let's spend this time in prayer and reflection, quiet meditation. Let me take a look at it one more time. I think I probably broke it. That was like a joke, and you're agreeing with me breaking it? So I think we may have one coming up here. All right, ladies and gentlemen, our amazing tech team, please welcome them. Thank you very much. And voila. And so, Phoenix to Uganda, go.
I moved to Uganda as a young missionary to serve with local nonprofits there and quickly became involved in a street outreach program to street children who were experiencing homelessness in the slums. And it has always been extremely important to us to partner together with the local church as well as Christian leaders in the community of which we are serving, local Christian leaders. And so as we were running the street program, we were running it from the local church that was located in the heart of the slums. And it was led by a wonderful godly man, Pastor Nelson Chasoka. And we were running the programs from there for a couple weeks. It was a simple church, a dirt floor, and just two sides of tin metal for the walls. And he came to me and he said, Abby, I love this program. I love that we get to be a part of it. But I just don't feel right that there's kids, you know, these kids are now sleeping on the dirt floor of our church, and I just don't feel right about that. And the church is, we own some simple rooms in the slums, and we want to give them to you, and I'm asking if you can please start a home for these children so that they're not living on the streets anymore. And I mean, I was very new to the mission field. I had just raised my missionary support. That's it. I had not prepared nor fundraised to run an entire children's home. And I remember I said I would think about it and pray about it. And I was praying, and I very quickly knew that God was saying that I needed to say yes, that he didn't want those kids sleeping on the dirt floor either. So what was I going to do about it? And I said yes, and we brought in at first a group of 16 kids in off the streets, and God indeed provided until they graduated, grew up and graduated from our programs. Hmm.
So you're serving in the slums of Kampala, and God is providing resources like rooms to stay in, but that ministry expanded beyond just reaching to kids. Tell us about that.
Yes, so we were living and serving in the slums to these children, and God just really gave me a heart for women who are exploited and just needing to sell themselves in order to survive. And so we felt called to lead a very small program for these women, giving them dignifying work of making paper beaded jewelry, where they would also go through a counseling course, Bible studies, reading classes, some life skills. And so we felt we could start, we could have a 4-year or a 3-year program with 4 women, because it's full-time employment. It was kind of a big responsibility. So there was a woman named Grace. Everyone, she was a Ugandan living in the slums who just was a very compassionate, godly woman, and all the women there would go to her for advice. So I went to Grace and I told her about the program. I was like, you know, Grace, do you think you could talk to a couple women who are in this lifestyle and would love to have a job that, you know, could provide, and this is what the program's going to look like. Can you please bring 4 women to our house? We're staying next Wednesday. And so next Wednesday, she brought 16 women to our house. And I was sitting there. My mom had come for that time. And I remember just looking around and being like, oh, man. I just told my mom, I was like, Mom, like, we don't have the money for this. Like, this is a big responsibility. How do we, I remember specifically saying, how do we choose which ones? And my mom's like, you're really going to send some away? And I was like, no, you're right. I'm not proud of it, but I did, I think in my own weakness, I tried. I was like, all right, this is the program and it's going to be, you know, I tried to make it sound terrible. Mm-hmm. All 16 women wanted to be in it. And so we had a very successful 3-year program with them. God, again, provided. And even the being given those rooms in the slum, we realized later how important that was for those women. It's not easy to build trust with women who've experienced just almost a lifetime of exploitation. But when we met with them, they're like, oh, yeah, you live here. You're one of us. And it was such a it allowed us to have a quick bond. You know, mm-hmm. we're neighbors, and God really used that as well.
So I know that a group from Desert Springs visited in 2013 and worked with you, and that's where we met. Mm-hmm. I'm almost certain that's we met for the first time. And you were serving in Kampala in the slums mm-hmm. and serving exploited children, exploited women. And then God broadened that. Actually, I believe gave David a couple or few dreams to move. Tell us about that shift from Kampala to the more rural part of Uganda.
So we did eventually move out of the slums, and we purchased 22 acres of land, and we built 3 children's homes. And we also had a farm where we were able to employ former street youth, 18 years and above, young men. And we were able to, over time, resettle all but 4 of those children back with their biological families, where we continued to support them. And so God really spoke to David first in our Ugandan board that he wanted us to move outside of, he wanted us to go to a very remote part of Uganda and to shine a light for Christ and to move out of an emergency response into empowering entire communities and support networks to 4 children as well as serving vulnerable children. And we were able to sell the children's home and then eventually the farm. And it took a while to find the land. And David was given 3 very... For any of you that don't know, David is my husband. I think I didn't clarify. Yes, the guy in the hat. And just walks very closely to the Lord. And he's very bold. And God really speaks to him. And I've learned to listen. And so God gave David really 3 specific dreams about this land. The first was he gave him a literal vision of what it was going to look like, which is what it looks like. But it was developed for the ministry site. The second was that God was going to give it to us at basically a giveaway price, which is what happened, and very specific details as to how we were going to purchase that land. And then the third dream, which didn't make sense at the time, but made sense later, God gave David a dream that there was going to be a shrine and a place where people had been sacrificing on our land, and that David was going to uncover it and destroy it and proclaim the place for Christ. And that happened.
Hold on. So you were in Phoenix, and God was like, go to Uganda.
Yes.
And you're like, okay. Uh-huh. And then you're in Uganda, and he's like, help these kids get, like, safety. Mm-hmm. And you're like, cool, mm-hmm. yeah. And then care for these women. Mm-hmm. And then move to a 22-acre farm mm-hmm. and raise up the boys and send them off. Mm-hmm. And then actually move further away
yep.
to a 640-acre property.
Yep.
And was that easy?
No. No. I didn't want to move out. I was really fearful. And it was not until I did that God gave me overwhelming peace and joy and community. And now Dave and I talk all the time. We did have a lot of fears. We knew it was what God was telling us to do. But it wasn't until we actually did it that we just felt those heart rewards for doing it. Hmm. Now we're like, I can't believe we ever wanted to live in or near Kampala. Ugh.
Yeah. So looking forward, things can be really scary. Uh-huh. There can be fear. And then you see God at work, and then you look back and say, oh.
Yeah, what was I thinking?
It seems like God had it the whole time. Yeah.
Yes.
I wonder maybe if any of y'all have had similar experiences. So you move out to this place more remote, Uganda, I think kind of west of Kampala, 640 acres. And you notice that some of the needs were not just for the children, but also there was some medical needs. Tell us about mm-hmm. that.
So as we moved out there, we had a women's Bible study, we were conducting home visits, and through that we were finding that there was just a lot of medical needs for the community, skin rashes, malaria, and just a lot, just most families were sick, and it was just really creating even more stress to these women who were working so hard to care for their families, for Emmanuel being a sustenance farmer. And so we put on a series of medical camps where we would provide medical treatment, triage, seeing a doctor, checking blood, and then providing the medication, as we also provided evangelism, prayer, and counseling. And At our previous medical camp, we were able to serve a few thousand people with medical care, but there was 11 people that needed follow-up operations. And so after the camp, you know, we had taken their information. I was like, all right, we might or might not get in touch. And there was two cases that were life or death for children. So that was, I mean, a no-brainer. Whatever we had to do, we would make sure to care for those kids. But 11 operations is a lot, and yeah. We did not have the money for that. We'd already spent more money on the medicine for the camp than we had. And so I was really feeling that God wanted us to provide it, but disobediently saying no, I guess, is what I could say. And for 2 days, I was really struggling, not having peace. God's a God of peace. For me, you know, when you don't feel that, there's something going on. And I was talking to my mom on the phone late at night and just telling her that, and I was just going around in circles, oh, you know, like, we don't have the money, but, and then finally, I was like, you know what, we'll do it. We will provide those 11 operations, well, Mom, we'll do it, and then, you know, we got off the phone, and I prayed and talked to David and said, we'll do it, and went to bed, and in the morning, I had an email from someone. They didn't know there was 11 operations, but they provided a donation for medical care, which completely provided for those operations, So God just, once I said yes, we said yes, God provided.
And it does sound like a recurring theme in your ministry is, like, the Holy Spirit sounds like your mom. There's a lot of, like, I had this thing, and then I talked to my mom, and then I had this thing and talked to me. Does that seem to be, like, talking it through with trusted people?
Yes.
Discerning the Spirit?
My parents, my dad's over there, and my mom are very wise people, and they are always, I mean, my mom came to be there when we opened the Hope House, came down to the slums when we'd opened our home, so they've been there for all of those big leaps of faith, and so yes, they're definitely a big drawing board for us.
I love that. And so now you're on this property, it's been developed out, a crew from Desert Springs was there last year, did some teacher training, and then hosted a version of Splash Camp for the over 100 students that were there. By the way, we are sending a team back in 2026. If you're interested, I'll give you more information here in just a minute. But tell us about what's going on now in the ministry there in Chibale.
So we are continuing. We have a school providing education for children without access to one. We are also continuing to work together with the police and the child welfare officer. We provide emergency care and support, short-term and long-term, for children in crisis, so children that have been trafficked, abandoned, or abused. And we get cases of a child or a sibling set at least every other week. And so we are serving just a lot of children who are really suffering and need ongoing care and support and in counseling and discipleship just to be able to overcome all that they've gone through. And so our school is very important to us. It's how we can really have a maximum impact in the lives of these incredible kids. And we're also continuing with our Kids in Crisis programs and as well as working with at-risk youth in our community. And God, again, miraculously, we are now finishing up with a dormitory. And this is a place that's going to allow us to give safe housing to children who desperately need it during school holidays, or they're in school but they do not have a place where they're safe. Their physical body is not safe, and that is a big need. It's been a big challenge for a lot of girls in our school. A lot of parents are coming to, I have even asked, can they just at least, like, sleep with the teacher? Because they're not safe. And so we are so excited for this next stage of ministry, having a dorm where we can provide even more discipleship and care and safety for vulnerable children.
So we're seeing God at work in providing this school for like 130, I think, young girls up to like pre-K through third, fourth grade?
Yes. Early education and then first, second, third grade. And then we'll every year we're adding another
every
class.
Every year it'll ladder up. And then also this dormitory, which we saw the foundation of it last year, and now it's got a roof and walls and everything. We're excited about that. I also know that you're part of ministry out in the broader community, that even this 640 acres is producing fruit trees, and that fruit provides food for the neighbors, many of whom are seeking refuge. They're not Ugandan, but they're coming in from places like Congo, and many of them experiencing assault and abuse in various forms. And so also Mending the Soul, which at Desert Springs we host Mending the Soul. It's also a ministry that's being done there in and through this work. Mm-hmm. And so as you've seen God at work over just these many years in a variety of different ways, going from Kampala out to now Chibule where you are, many of us are also feeling anxiety about economic security, global unrest, political insecurity. Some of us are having, we're very concerned about health issues in our home, in our own bodies. What encouragement would you give to us as we think about not only our fears, but also God's provision in those spaces?
I think the word leap of faith comes to mind, and it's used a lot. But I think for me, you know, there's this leap that you take off this cliff, and you're jumping, and it's leap of faith because you don't see where you're gonna land, and there's no worldly reasonable explanation of how you're gonna land properly. But that when you take it, God shows up, and how that leap is really scary. God has done a lot, but in those transitions, when you say yes before He provides, it's scary. It's overwhelming. We rely on Him because we have no other options. And I think that when we do that, even though there is, you know, it's stressful, when God shows up, I think it's such a reminder of His goodness and His faithfulness. And so when I'm in that place again, I just think back on all of the challenges that I had and God showed up. And I think that it just is something that God can use in your testimony, in your future, for you to encourage your faith. And God, He is with us. He loves us. We are His children. And just like we provide for our children, God provides for us, even when we're not always seeing the ways that He's at work.
Oh, amen. I love that. Can we say thank you to Abby for having her? Thank you so much, Abby.